Andrea Bastian.
And I'm Aubrey Calvin, and this is Southern Queries,
exploring all things LGBTQ in the South. Hello, and welcome back to our conversation with Emily and Lane. In the first part of this episode, if you haven't heard it, I highly recommend you go back and listen to Emily and Lane's part one, the intersectionality of being intersex. I really think that this part of the conversation is really hard to kind of gauge what we've been talking about and how we got here without listening to part one. So if you haven't heard part one, go listen to that and then come back and listen to this one. If you're here because you already listened to part one, it's such a great conversation. I really think we had a slow uphill climb to get to the really nitty-gritty and deep ends of Lane and Emily's story. But I really think it's such a pivotal moment for us to have this conversation since it is such a hot topic in today's society. I also think that it's really important to have good statistics and understanding of what is actually happening out in today's world. I really think the conversations around gender-affirming care is also outrageously misinformed. And I really want to emphasize that Lane's consistent messaging about how intersex and trans folk should really do more together is really accurate. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what it means to have gender-affirming surgery versus gender-affirming care versus having surgery as a baby, as an intersex child. So I think there's a lot of learning that we can get from this conversation. As always, please enjoy this conversation that Aubrey and I had with Lane and Emily. Here's a quick recap of what happened in part one. Aubrey and I spoke to Emily and Lane about their dating life, and we learned what it was like for both of them to date as a queer or an intersex person. In the episode, we learned a bit about Lane being conditioned as a woman and how they discovered that there was something more to just them being masculine of center. We also learned that their dermatologist let them know of a skin condition that only presents itself in men and recommended for them to learn a little bit more about what was going on in their life. After some blood tests, Lane learned that they had more chromosomes than other folk, and we went down the rabbit hole with them, learning what that actually meant. Please enjoy where we left off from part one in this episode. So you're 26,
yeah.
The geneticist gives you a call, you have this new information.
Yeah, and it really changed my world, but at the same time, yeah. I want to make this really clear. This is like a very good doctor that I'm seeing who could not tell me that what this meant was that I was intersex.
Oh.
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
Oh. Okay, so this, oh. There's still more for this to unfold. I didn't realize until about 7 years later that my mosaicism
was the same thing as
being intersex. I had been the way I was explaining it to people was that I was biologically trans.
Wow.
Because
you didn't have a word for it.
I know, I didn't have a word for it. And then when I found the word for it, it was just like a wave of relief came over me, because I know we talk about, you know, type this label discussion earlier.
Yeah.
It does help to identify what community that you need to be a part of, because
it really does.
And I was part of, you know, a trans man support group for a while, but I never really felt like I fit in there. Like when people would say, oh, are you trans? Not the same way that...
Kind of.
Sort of.
And it's always been so difficult to, you know, to draw the distinction there for me, because I have gone through a social transition. Mm. Like I have...
Changed pronouns.
I have stopped
Left
using
the dead name behind.
There has been a transition there, but it's different than the type of transition that a trans person makes. Like, Sure. The intersex experience is different than the transgender. Mm-hmm.
I think there are some intersections.
But there are intersections.
Yes. There are similarities, yes. But it's just not across the
board.
And
that's why, you know, I think there's so much we can do together. But yes, it was years later that I finally understood what this really meant and could articulate it. And finally explain it to my family in a way that they accepted, which was also really hard.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so backing up just a little bit.
Sorry, I like cut you off on one of your follow-ups.
No, it was so good.
The other questions you were going to ask.
Great. Yeah. So when you hit puberty, were you like, oh, wow, I'm attracted to women, I'm gay? Did you have a coming out even prior to that?
That's a little bit more traumatic. So I will say that from my earliest memories, I have always identified as male.
Like you knew that on the inside.
Always.
You had some understanding of it.
I played sports with boys. I was all on all the boys' teams. My development, if you post this video, I'm sitting down, but I'm 6 feet tall and have like linebacker shoulders and an Adam's apple. So like, I'm not necessarily like, you can't hide some of those things. Mm-hmm.
And you were big when you were in high school.
I was big. So, but you know, just also being broad and tall doesn't mean that you're intersex. Mm-hmm. There are women out there that are broad and tall and they're beautiful and should be celebrated.
You really need to meet my wife.
Yeah.
But, God bless them.
But yes, I've always known that I was attracted to women. I have not ever been attracted to a man, like not one single time in my whole life. But it was at puberty, I think, was when I really started having to reconcile that. And growing up in an evangelical household, so much repression and like denial and just like, I'm gonna try to be this lady for a minute. And that was a very awful failed experiment. To look at me, like, look at pictures of me from high school, like, and I typically don't get them out, because to me it's like, I'm not trying to hide who I was, but it's also a piece of me that I'm like, it exists, and I'm not going to erase it, but I'm also not going to, like, parade it out.
There's
and,
trauma
like,
associated
relive
with it too.
All the time, because all it is, you know, photographic evidence that I was having to live as a person who I am not.
Hey,
trying to assimilate to a binary that shouldn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not intersex and I don't have that, but I feel the same way even though my coming out was non-traumatic. I mean, it was traumatic in a different way, but I look back at photos of being married to my husband and being like, who is that person? Mm-hmm. And it, like, I lived it, but I also have like zero recollection of it. And there's a lot of like weird stuff that happened in my teen years and youth that I just completely blocked out because it was so not my most authentic self.
Right.
And, but really my follow-up question was your family. But then I was like, wait a second. It sounds like there was multiple.
Oh yeah. There were, I mean, listen, I feel like I've had to come out like six different times. And,
yeah.
I mean, even like, in October of 2020 for National Coming Out Day, I did a presentation for my office coming out as intersex, and explaining what it was and saying, these are my pronouns, like, please use these. Because at the office, I the people who I'm like really good friends with know, I've always known and have always like really tried to encourage me to stop like placating people and saying it's, you know, it's fine, whatever, call me whatever. Because it doesn't feel great to not be called by your preferred pronouns, but also like depending on the way you've grown up. And you know, I'm an elder millennial bordering on Gen X, and it wasn't solidarity. All right,
it's a weird place to be.
It is a really weird place to be.
And
it really is.
We haven't always had the agency.
I don't think I fit neither way.
Yes. But we haven't always had, you know, the agency to come out and say, like, this is who I am, and it be accepted. So, of course, I'm apprehensive about taking up the space to say, these are my pronouns, please use these, even when asked directly. So it's not even about being given the opportunity to say, you know, these are my pronouns, please use them. It's feeling like I still don't have the freedom to do that without judgment or repercussions. So getting that out of the way, you know, that, and that was, it was a really great experience doing that at my job.
Yeah.
I work for a very progressive marketing agency, and our parent company is also, you know, really celebrates the queer community, and I'm very fortunate to be employed where I am. We have gender affirming care covered under our insurance. It's great. I know.
I feel like that's a rarity here in Texas. So I felt
not to say that it's easy to find, but it's covered.
Yeah.
But doing that really helped me prepare to have this conversation again with my family, because the first time I had the conversation with my family, I wasn't armed with the correct vocabulary to use. So going, you know, trotting in my biologically trans, which is a made up term that somebody who is, you know, part of the intersex community had to use because they weren't given all the right information, that freaked them out.
Sure.
And there was I will say this for my family. We have all reconciled since the very damaging experience that followed me sharing this information. It was not pretty, and it took a very long time to fully heal and come full circle with my siblings, who have since not just apologized but truly repented of the way they handled the situation. And they accept me, and they love me, and they love Emily, which is more than I ever thought that I would get from my family. And it's amazing. But having that practice of coming out, really, hopefully for the last time,
knock on wood,
to show, you know, this is who I am, and then being able to take that practice and go back to my mom and really explain it to her and have her get it this time. Because I was describing it correctly. I had been able to say, this is who I am. Like, how do I make this make sense to my parents? How do I make this make sense to my siblings? And what's funny is, leading up to this, and we've been having this conversation, I mean, we've been together for 2.5 years, and there was a lot of, how are you going to, you know, tell your family, I don't want us to get married with your family calling you she at our wedding when you're going to be my husband. And I mean, it was yeah, something that I knew that needed to be addressed. And I was like, I'm going to address it before the time gets there, but I need some time. Well, all of a sudden my nieces and nephews start asking me what my pronouns are.
Oh God. You're like,
because they're learning that that's the appropriate thing to do. They're learning that you should assume someone's pronouns.
Yeah. Yes.
And they are seeing that, and they're like, oh, Uncle Lane might be someone we should ask.
Every new generation gets it a little bit sooner.
A little better.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank God.
And so, so my Gen Z nieces and nephews, God love them, like, really kind of helped me
dip your toe into the family conversation.
And
that's cool.
Having Emily's support through all this has been just unbelievable, because I really don't think that I would have been empowered to do a lot of the things that I've done to not just learn more about who I am and what it is to be intersex, but to really have the fire lit under me to be more of an advocate for the entire intersex community. And to try to find community there and to make connections that are going to help me love myself more.
Totally.
It's been a wild ride.
I guess that's my question to you, Emily, is, so you, I guess, India, you say, how did you all you all connected through Instagram first, right?
Mm-hmm.
What prompted you to first start posting about intersex issues or?
His permission. I'm kind of the opposite of him in that I don't like really care if I'm making other people comfortable with my identity. Like it took me a long time to get to a place where I could understand my identity, which was like early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to that place, you know, it was a lot of like religious trauma growing up, evangelical, all that stuff. When I came to a place where I decided I was going to leave all of that behind and come out and own who I am, with that came, I'm done apologizing. I'm done like fitting into a box that makes other people comfortable. So I'm like a loud queer, you know?
Do you see why I wanted to be your friend?
So when I was being quiet about him and his identity and his biology, it was because he asked me to.
Sure.
When I started talking about it, it was because he said it was okay. And I'm like, finally now. And I also, that's not my story to tell, you know, and I understand that. Yeah.
No, I get that. No,
yeah.
My wife has talked a lot more about my story than I ever have. So she's a lot more vocal.
I mean, it's
about our relationship than me, but you know, she is in that world of just not caring about what anybody thinks. So
yeah. Lane, thank you for sharing that story with us. I think it's really important for our audience to hear, just because I don't know about y'all, but for me, the media focuses on these coming out stories, on kids in their tweens or teenage years. But as adults, at least for me, I came out in my adult years, and I had to go through a divorce in order to do it. And I think we don't give enough attention or permission for adults to come out later in life. So I think also explaining how long it took for your family and how now today you guys are in a good spot is also something that maybe people might need to hear and be validated for. And there's still people in their adulthood who might not have family members who are okay with whatever your situation is. Yeah. So now I kind of want to ask a little bit about where you are at, Emily. Obviously, you have already said that you identify as queer. Sounded like you were married to a woman. And now you're going to be marrying this very handsome man. How's that gone? Tell us about that.
As it relates to like my family or...
And so, your own coming out to
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was more of a coming out to like my friends. I lived in Dallas for a long time and I was very like in the lesbian scene. And, you know, I was just always with the girls. And then I start dating a guy and... there was a little bit of a shift, you know, in like dynamics and friend groups and things like that. You know, when you're so used to, and I don't know what your life is like or your life is like, but being, you know, two women being married, like it's just different. It's like being surrounded by women all the time. That's kind of how I lived. And now I'm in, you know, a very different world. My family loved him immediately. And I know. It's so true. He's just a really nice guy, and you know that immediately. Yes.
I guess
true.
My question, maybe I should be more specific because I really like where you were going with that. I don't mean to interrupt you, but my life as a queer woman married to a man and straight presenting really provided me a different community. And then when I divorced my husband, it was all women all the time, no men at all whatsoever. And I'm married to a woman who's very masculine presenting. Most of the time people think she's a man. And I think we get mistaken a lot as a straight couple. And sometimes lesbian communities can be very not friendly to more masculine of center women, depending on the different... I see nodding.
I mean, that's another reason why I didn't think I was going to get anywhere on the dating apps, because I was like, I know how the lesbian community likes me.
And it's that they don't.
I mean, not all, but I have found my fair share oh God, I mean, Allison can't understand because she's more masculine of center. I'm like, excuse you? She is full-blown woman, but just because she wants to dress like a man, and
there's so many different ways also, to like, be women on, and men or binary. Whatever. Like, really? Who the fuck cares? It yes. doesn't matter.
Cool. All right, carry on.
I just lost my train of thought. So we're going back to family, right?
Yeah, and, like, I wanted to know. Identity.
Everybody likes me.
That's what everything me. Goes back to. Is
well, no, I wanted to know is. How your coming out was with your family the different times around. I'm assuming you had to do it a couple times.
When I started dating him, because he was still figuring out how he was going to, not present, but how he was going to be, like if he was going to do he, him pronouns, or if he was just going to say, it doesn't matter, call me whatever. He was still figuring it out. So I very much followed his lead and said, what do you want me to say? I had already done a lot of work as far as boundaries with my family and my relationships, in that like everybody in my life pretty much knows that if I say this is what I'm doing and I want to tell you why, I will. But if I don't, I won't, and I don't have to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And even my family knows that. And I don't, I mean that in the most respectful way, because they, you know, I'm a 38-year-old woman. Like, I'm not a 12-year-old. So I'm, you know.
It's the most loving thing you can do exactly. for yourself, people, and your
yes.
friends.
Yes. So when I family. Told them I'm dating someone who identifies as a guy, they said, okay. And I'm sure there were questions, but yeah. they weren't. My mom had a few for me. But for the most part, I'm sure that those questions were, I don't know if they were discussed, you know, without me around. It's really none of my business. I just know that, you know, I decided to date him, and I did, and I guess everybody had to get used to it, you know.
I like her.
It's really my favorite thing about her. You cannot tell her what to do.
No. No, that
and
doesn't work very well.
If once she makes up her mind, just get out of the way.
Yeah, and everybody kind of knows that.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Aubrey, you know me. I have a million questions, but I always want to make sure I leave space for you to interject here. See, then I put Aubrey on the spot. She's like, I don't know.
It's rude to okay. do that to an introvert. Put him on the spot.
We've gone through this.
Well, I have some follow-up questions. Duh. Yeah. Can we talk wedding for a second? Mm-hmm. And engagement?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know how many answers we have. But...
Oh, you want to talk engagement? I'll tell you a story about how you can't tell this woman what to do. And it's amazing.
Well, I'm listening. Okay. Tell me more.
I cannot. Do you mind if I share the story?
Tell the story.
All right. So we got engaged in October.
Of 2021?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, this is 2021, right? Yeah.
This is 2022. We got engaged in 2021.
No one does. No one does.
Yes. So I had been planning this for a very long time. I had a race that I ran in Comfort in the 2 days before, and I got her two childhood best friends to take her to Fredericksburg, and like disguised as a girls' weekend. And I was like, I'll just come up, you know, after my race is done, and, you know, we can hang out with Brooke and Abby, and then they can go home, and we'll have a day, and, you know, everything will be fine. It'll be a great little getaway. And so she doesn't know. She has no idea. So we go out to Enchanted Rock after I get to Fredericksburg, and Emily does not love heights, which is...
a gross understatement.
It's, yeah, yeah.
I have a very severe phobia. Like, yeah. It's really, really, it's very bad.
So, I had really tried really hard, because we go to Enchanted Rock every year for spring break. We're going to go here in a couple of weeks. And I was like, what is the way that I can get us to this one point without any massive elevation gains? Like, I studied a topographical map. Like for weeks, and finally was like, this is our route we're taking, this is how we're gonna get there. Well, we are, you know, we're going and everything's fine. I've got the ring in my pocket. She has no idea what's happening, and we start, you know, going up an incline, and she's like, when is this gonna end? And I'm like, yeah, just over this hill, it'll flatten out, it'll be fine. We get to the top and it is not. She's like,
why would you say that word?
It wasn't. Yeah. So she basically,
trigger word right there.
We are less than 0.2 miles away from the place that I am trying to get to ask her to marry me, and she's like, I'm going back, see ya. So she turns around.
Oh no!
And I like look at her friends and I'm like, I got this. I got it. So she goes and like, you know, I'm like, why don't you just, you know, sit down for a minute, like, let's have some water. And I told her friends, let's have some water. It was the cue that I was about to start. And so I'm like trying to start my proposal and she keeps telling me, just stop. Please
I just
stop.
I needed my space for a minute. Like I had been, I got upset and I needed to calm myself down. And Aubrey, you might, as an introvert,
totally
understand that. Like you need a
sometimes
minute.
Sometimes you need that space.
And I didn't want attention. I did. Yeah, exactly. Right. I know that you want to like pet me and make sure I'm okay, but I need to get myself okay.
I'm picturing your friends like getting ready to pull out their phones.
Oh, they already were.
Oh,
it's all, oh, it's all this is on video, including my childish behavior.
Oh no.
Yes. Yes. One of her friends is a photographer, and I was like, "This works out." She's
that's
an amazing photographer.
Yep.
So I'm like, you know, starting my speech that I've been rehearsing, like, you know, for some time, and she keeps like telling me to stop. She's like, "I want you to stop," and I said, "I think you want me to keep going," and she goes, "No, I don't actually," which is like what I want our wedding hashtag to be, by the way.
Instead of "I do,"
"No,
no
I don't
actually.
So finally, like I get through the whole thing that I, you know, as much as I can, and she's
the part
like,
that I didn't ruin.
And I said, "Okay, I'll stop. Can you just do one thing for me first?" And she goes, yes.
"No." Well, let me point out that the important part that I heard was, "I'll stop. If you let me do this one thing." I was like, okay, whatever I need to do to make you stop, I will do it.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right. So I reach into my backpack. I get out the ring, get out on one knee. And she's like, oh man, what have I done?
What were you feeling?
I mean, a lot of things. I was like, I just ruined this puzzle, you know?
No, it was perfect. It was perfect because every single reaction that you had
was a real one.
Was a real one.
It was,
and it was so like exactly who you are. Like, I'm not gonna let you tell me what to do. I'm gonna do what I need to do for me. And like, you know, you can take your little plan and go do something else with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like, I'm content just to watch you go, you know, and that I think like captured our dynamic so well, like the whole thing, like, you know, you do what you want to do, and I just say okay, and then, you know, then we get married and do it for the rest of our lives, and it's great. But yes, that's
the romantic proposal story.
That is a beautiful story. What did we not ask that you think our listeners and audience should know? Ooh. And what message would you like to share with our people?
I want to say something about partners of intersex people and trans people, because
they also need a voice. Yes.
That, like, I have this vision in my mind of like getting us together, you know. I don't know what that would look like and how I could accomplish that, but I do think that there are some unique experiences that we have being partnered to people that are gender diverse, especially like when you're with them kind of when they're going through it, you know, rather than, not that you're, I mean, I know you're always going through everything, right? Identity and all of that is something that we never really finish. Like it's forever.
Sure.
But I think there's kind of a mark in most trans intersex people's lives where they come to an understanding of who they are and they live that way, and you know, we're good on that.
Yeah.
And if me coming into his life at a time where he hadn't gotten to that place, and it sounds like your wife, y'all had maybe the same experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think that it is different, and I don't know. It involves a lot of like, look at him, you know, let's talk about him, let's talk about her, like, this is an issue that we need to work out, and not that I begrudge it, because I don't, it's just different, and I would like to hear more from other people like me, partners like me of intersex and trans people, and, you know, what that's like. I know, like, you know, he can sometimes be a little bit more patient with people who misgender than I am, but then he's better at, like, hiding it, and then we get home and he's bothered by it. So that's something that I live with, and I don't...
Oh, I know.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about this.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think that it's, like, it's unique, and I wish that that were a part of the community that got together a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's part of the reason why I interviewed Aubrey's wife, because I was like, I need to hear from the partners.
Yes.
I also, there's an episode, I'll share it with you, Greta, she went through her previous partner's transition, and I was like, I need to talk to you, Greta. I mean, yes, Caleb's journey was totally important to be heard, but partners also need to be heard, and also couples. I think it's really powerful to have couples who are starting this life together. Couples like Aubrey and Vicky who are still married. Because, and I don't know if either of you have ever had
the old couple. You've been married forever and you're old now.
And y'all still are married.
No, I mean, like,
14 years of marriage, y'all are the old ones.
I'm just making an assumption here, but if I was trans or intersex, you might think that you might not ever find anyone. Much less find someone who wants to be there for you through your journey.
Yes.
Because the journey...
That is something that I feel like I have seen in him, is really starting to understand and accept that he is very much deserving of the love and support that I give him. It's not... It is a gift, because love and support are always gifts, but they are gifts that he is deserving of.
Yeah.
And the fact that he is not cis doesn't make him any less deserving of unconditional love and support and understanding, and a partner that loves him exactly the way that he is. And I think, like, that's something that partners like me understand, and we want the whole world to see. Like, this person is beautiful. There is nothing wrong with them. There is nothing about them that needs to be fixed. We see them as perfect. I understand that the intersex condition is something that people sometimes think, oh, well, we need to put them here and here. You know, we need to make it binary, and so that we can all understand it and digest it. And I don't want that for him. I like him exactly the way that he is.
And there should be more solidarity between you and other people who are going through it.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Lane, same question.
So much. I mean, I feel like, really more than anything, I want to make sure people know where they can go to get additional resources on learning about intersex. So Interact is an organization that really supports a lot of intersex youth, but there is great information on the site if you're interested in learning more about what constitutes intersex and what it looks like, different things that you can do to support the intersex community. They have a great website with a lot of great information. Also, the Intersex Justice Project is another really great resource. They're focused more on serving the BIPOC communities for intersex youths and people in general, but it's all amazing information, and there's some really great people associated with the organization that we can learn a lot from. Plus, you know, you can go on Instagram. There are a couple of people that I follow that I'd highly recommend. XOXY Alicia. She's in Austin. She is not just an intersex person and advocate, but an advocate of all human rights. And
specifically in the state of Texas.
Yes, and does a lot in Austin to really try to affect change. And she's great. She's always got really wonderful information to share. And then also Intersexy is an account that is great. Really celebrates.
And just a nice word.
Yes,
it
is. Really is.
Intersexy. Yes. I like it.
So, you know, you can commit without, you know, me sitting here and going blow by blow through everything that constitutes being an intersex person. You know, you can go and do research on your own to try to know a little bit more. But don't forget about us. Don't use language that contributes to intersex erasure. Remember the I. You know, I can think of any other, you know, little things to say that ultimately boil down to, we're part of the community. We need community.
and please don't exclude us. Like, we want to fight alongside everybody for the same rights that we fear will get taken away, and we deserve to have that. And that's about it. We're a group of people.
We exist, turns out.
We exist, yeah.
That is beautiful. Thank you.
You can find more information about this episode and the show at our website, southernqueries.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Southern Queries. Queries is with two E's. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Some credits. Production, your hosts, India and Aubrey. Audio mixing by Allison Holly. Story research, Aubrey Calvin. Editing, India Bastian. This is Southern Queries.
You can find more information about this episode and the show at our website, southernqueries.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Southern Queries. Queries is with two E's. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Some credits. Production, your hosts, India and Aubrey. Audio mixing by Allison Hawley. Story research, Aubrey Calvin. Editing, India Bastien. This is Southern Queries.